Welcome to Endless 08, a time loop anime podcast. I'm Duffo.
I'm BJ.
It is 2008. We are watching and discussing anime from 2008, the year that it is.
And what a phenomenal year it is.
It is a good year to be watching anime, basking in Japanese culture in a way that anime is bringing to us.
For sure.
As we've been watching a lot of these shows, there is the localization certainly isn't as heavy-handed as it is for shows that, like, even just like a few years before this. Do you remember this era of, especially Four Kids became infamous for this?
Yeah, yeah. I'm casting my mind back to Pokemon when Brock made his special jelly donuts, which were just rice balls. Very fun stuff, yeah.
Yeah, this is a very big part of early anime watching. There are parts in there where localizers have decided either references aren't going to land properly because they're too specifically Japanese, or they are just doing things differently for
some reason. It almost feels like somebody came along and said, you need to change this, when realistically, like, there was no real need. Like, it's very clear that this is not American TV show, or like Western TV show, if you will. And it feels like there was somebody higher up, like a government agency or something, saying, like, you need to westernize this thing, when realistically, obviously, that didn't happen. But there was somebody who got a bee in their bonnet and was like, nah, I'm not dealing with this shit. We're changing it.
I was doing some research as we were watching this episode about Funimation.
Okay.
It's a topic that I thought we needed to cover at some point. Mm-hmm. Funimation did this one that we're about to talk about. Funimation has done quite a few of the other shows we've discussed and will discuss.
Yeah, yeah.
They are the big dub house that exists in America. And I was kind of looking at their early days. I'd really like to read you a news article from 1995.
Wow.
The Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Okay, yep, cool. What? Okay, I'm...
Premier Texan journalism.
Yes, I'm... Okay, okay.
Yeah.
The fact that... Okay, based on that, sounds like all this stuff, all this translation and whatnot was happening in Texas, which then makes me think, yeah, okay, there probably was someone there who was just like, what the fuck is this foreign shit? Nah!
Yeah, Funimation is a company that started in Texas.
Right.
It's founded by Jen Fukunaga.
Oh, okay.
The man who's gone on to, you know, make like a whole huge business career off of Funimation.
Yeah, but, I was going to say, that's a name that I recognize. I don't know what I recognize it from, but especially the surname Fukunaga, I definitely have seen that before.
But in the early days, he's someone, he worked at IBM originally.
Oh.
Working over there, he got into business with a mate of his. The article will get into this,
okay,
where he convinces his friend to invest some money into this project, specifically to bring the cartoon Dragon Ball over to America.
One of the greatest shots ever made, I guess. Yeah.
The headline on this, Japanese cartoon requires PC touch for US viewers.
Wow.
A preview of Dragon Ball, a Japanese cartoon being Americanized for audiences here, will air at 11 a.m. Saturday on KDFW. Regular half-hour episodes will run at 6 a.m., yada yada. Never mind that Kevin Costner emptied his bladder in the opening moments of Waterworld. Goku, the little boy star of Japan's most watched cartoon, won't be doing that in the Americanized version of Dragon Ball.
Okay. I should be very clear here. Dragon Ball is not my thing. I've never watched like more than about a minute of Dragon Ball. It's just not my thing. I had no idea that happened. I kind of feel like I'm missing out now.
Quote, in the original, he stands on top of a mountain and urinates. It's something boys do, says Daniel Kokonoga, a partner in Funimation Productions, Inc., a North Richland Hills company that is conforming Dragon Ball to American sensibilities and tastes. In our cartoons here, we have the politically correct mentality, he said.
Okay. I'm trying to think back to cartoons. Wait, this time.
I think he's got a different understanding of political correctness.
Yeah.
To what we maybe have today.
Yeah, that's definitely a word that has changed over time. For sure.
That is part of Funimation's two-year-long challenge of preparing the cartoon produced by the creators of popular Mighty Morphin Power Rangers for its American debut. So, the text is given to the writers hired by Funimation. The voices are added by the actors in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Oh, yeah, okay. Wow.
Yeah, dubbing the cartoon in English and adding new music are the easy parts. What is proving difficult is translating the cartoon so that its storylines are acceptable in a Western culture that has a puritanical bent. Quote, in Japan, they try and treat the characters more complete and round and real. Kokonoga said, noting that Japanese aren't upset by the depiction of bodily functions. We have to be real careful with that, or we'll get a lot of letters to the station.
Wow, nice sick burn there. Like, in Japan, we like characters that are actual characters and not just this shit that you've got over here.
And that's what fleshing out characters means. It means yes. Showing them piss on screen.
Of course. Yeah, if I don't see a character's genitals, then how can I know for sure that they're an actual character?
Funimation is co-owned by Kokonoga's brother Robert and his father Alan. They own Kokonoga Feed Corporation of Decatur and invest in real estate.
Okay. Cool, so this is like a side gig for them, good to know.
Yeah, they formed Funimation after being approached by Jen Fukunuga of Sunnyvale, California, a nephew of a Toei executive.
Okay.
Fukunuga knew Daniel Kokonoga from college and had worked with him at IBM in the 1980s. Let's skip through, they talk about how it's already very popular in Japan, Spain, France. Lots of action, lots of music, real colourful.
I was about to be surprised that Spain and France got it before, like, the US did. But I shouldn't be that surprised because looking back, there was a recent, like another series of the Loop and the Third series, and I was looking into that and its history a bit. It's really popular in France.
Mm.
And it had like from like the Loop and the Third series has been around since the 60s, I think. And it was popular in France back then. So clearly, the US is late to the party on anime.
Yeah, France has always been more willing to take animation seriously.
Mm.
They have a strong interest in animation production themselves, and the pipeline over to Spain just kind of, well, into Spanish speaks for itself.
Yeah.
This is the part I wanted to come to at the very end. Even the dragon has gone through some scrutiny in preparation for American viewers.
I'm sorry?
There's a green dragon. Yeah. You collect the seven dragon balls, you summon the dragon and ask him for a wish. In the Japanese original, he is a dragon god. Quote, "We talked to several priests and ministers, and most didn't have a problem with it, but they said some people might," Kokonoga said. "So we changed it to Eternal Dragon."
Wow! What an amazingly important change! I bet that this took more than one meeting. Like, it wasn't even just like, maybe we should change this. It would have been like, do we need to change this? Let's consult some people. Several priests and ministers, they say.
Yeah, like, they are driving around small town Texas, pulling into every church they see, showing a photo of the dragon from Dragon Ball and saying, "How do you feel about this?
If I call this a god, what would you say?" I love that all of them were just like, "I don't give a shit." Whatever. But the thing that nailed it was that it was probably like, you know, they asked 10 priests or whatever, and they're probably like two. Like all of them said, "Yeah, okay," but there was two that would have been like, "Yeah, but maybe Tom down the road. He's a bit of a weird dude. He wouldn't like it." They were like, gotta cater to Tom.
Gotta cater to Tom.
Gotta make sure that he feels safe and secure in his identity.
There will be no blaspheming with false dragon gods on Texan airwaves.
Wow.
This flows in really well to the show that we are about to talk about, because this is a show that is going to take Christianity and do some very strange things with it. We are talking about a certain magical index.
Yeah, Toaru Majutsu no Index. It's an interesting show with that. I say interesting. I actually kind of want to say lazy. Like, I really don't feel like they actually did all that much research into. Like, I'm pretty sure this is based on, you know, a short novel or whatever, like series again.
Yeah.
But I feel like whoever initially came up with it didn't actually do a hell of a lot of research. Like, they talk, like, there's a lot of terms they use, and there's a lot of, like, you know, they seem to know what they're talking about. But also, I would argue that a lot of, there's no themes or anything that are tied into it that really make me think, yeah, they've read this stuff and understood it. It's like the Evangelion thing of, like, we saw this imagery, we thought, that's cool, let's use it, and didn't actually really bother to try and look into anything, really. Worked out in Evangelion. It kind of works out here, for sure. But
Evangelion,
like,
doesn't present it as being religious teachings.
Yes.
They don't present any of the characters as being priests.
They don't present anyone as believing in these particular things. It is all just imagery.
Yes.
And it's used vaguely enough that you can kind of go, oh, yeah, okay, cool. I think that means this thing. And you're not really going to be wrong because it doesn't have a stable, solid, deep meaning behind it. Whereas here, they've got some very explicit explanations of things that I'm just like, I guess, yeah, like, I don't know enough about Christianity to know whether or not that's a true statement or not. But I also don't feel like you know.
So I'd love to tell you about these light novels that this came from.
Please, please.
So yeah, production history here. The light novel series written by Kazuma Komachi.
Okay.
Started in 2004.
Oh, wow. Oh, hang on. No, it is 2008. That was only 4 years ago. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Sorry. I had a weird moment where my brain just thought that it was actually quite a long time ago. But no, it's only 4 years ago. Yeah. No, easy.
Yeah. This is picked up by JC Staff, who we both know pick up any light novel that gets remotely popular. And this one is kind of a no-brainer.
I kind of want to say they'll pick up any light novel. Doesn't matter how popular it is, to be honest. If somebody has mentioned it to one of their staff, they'll go, hey, we need that. Go get it. Quick.
This one is a much safer bet than a lot of the others because the light novel for this sold really well.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's very popular. I've got something here that actually speaks to the popularity. As I was just searching around, I found this Anime News Network piece from 2018. A certain magical index's Toma and Misaka topped the Kono light novel Ga Sugoi 2019 character poll.
Sorry, just to be clear, that the title of that one was, this light novel is amazing.
Yes. Toma and Misaka have both been long-standing favorites among voters of the poll. Misaka has been the number one female character since 2010, a streak that was only interrupted once in 2015 when she came second to Yukino Yukinoshita from My Youth Romantic Comedy Is Wrong As I Expected. Toma has come first in 2011 and 2017, although he has been in the top 10 every year since 2007.
Wow. Wow. I'm going to be honest. Like, I really like this show. Yeah. I did watch it back in high school, and I enjoyed it back then, and I enjoyed it again this time. But I did not realize just how much of an impact this has had.
Yeah, in Japan, especially in light novels, this is huge. It's, you know, completely beating out every other protagonist from all kinds of light novels.
Yeah, and that was when we come to the slightly embarrassing section where I don't know if I've told you this. there is a spin-off of this show.
Yes.
It's called Railgun. We don't need to get into it right now. We'll get into it later, sure.
Oh, but, we can cover. This is a show that got three seasons. It got a spin-off called Railgun about a side character, which got a sequel. And then it's also had a third spin-off about the character Accelerator.
Did it get a third one about Accelerator? Yeah, I didn't even know that. Wow. Wow.
Huge production footprint. And it's always been a bit baffling for Western fans who, again, don't quite get the cultural grip that this has over in Japan. And they're like, why does this keep getting renewed?
Actually, yeah, for sure. When I lived in Japan, I every now and then I would see images of like the characters or whatever, or see merch and stuff. And I didn't quite put it together in my head, but because I'm pretty sure at the time there wasn't anything releasing like when I first got there. So it was like it had just been, you know, off the air for however long, but there was still merch and stuff. And it's kind of actually sounds like it's got that Evangelion thing of even though it's not, you know, super popular in the zeitgeist as because there's a new movie or whatever, it's just there, ever present, always. Go into an anime store and there's probably a figurine of Misaka somewhere. Go and there's probably like a clear file folder with Toma and Index in the front or something. Like it's just all there still being produced somehow.
Yes, I'm sorry to cut you off there. I know what you're leading into. I have minimal details about it, but you briefly mentioned you were going to talk about this.
Yeah.
The side character, Mikasa.
Misaka.
Misaka, sorry.
Yes. So she's got her own series called Railgun. And I don't know if I should go into this, but I will anyway. We'll cut it later if we need to. When the pandemic happened, you know, locked down, can't go anywhere, can't do a lot of stuff. A lot of time for reflection. Turns out, I learned a lot about myself. This is the moment where I tell you that is the moment when I found out I was trans. Fantastic times. Not fantastic times as well, because it was quite stressful and weird. But kind of what really unlocked it, the moment that kind of clicked. I was watching Railgun.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be embarrassed, but dear God, I am. I was watching Railgun and I was looking at this character being cool and being like, it was the moment when I realized, oh, it's not that she's hot. It's not that she's like, you know, whatever. It's that I want to be that.
So this show has a transification hit rate.
Yeah, yeah. Don't let your kids watch this if you don't want them to be trans. But also, like, if that's you, you're not watching this or listening to this anyway, so that's fine. But yeah, it was a big, big moment for me. And God, that's embarrassing to admit, but there you go. Happy, enjoy that fact, everyone. If you know me in real life, do not fucking talk to me about this. I'm gonna deny it.
Yeah, she is definitely, we'll talk about her. I believe she's a highlight in the show as well.
100%.
In this English dub, I know you watch the Japanese, but the English voice dub she has, Brittany Kabowski does a really good job with her.
Okay.
Like, it's a standout performance.
Fantastic.
I remember looking up people's thoughts on the dub about this, because I thought some of the voices kind of sucked, actually.
Okay.
And I'll get into it a bit later.
Yep.
But everyone's like, no, this is amazing. Brittany Kabowski is amazing.
Okay. Fantastic.
And, you know, she's playing two characters in a sense here.
Yes.
Where she is herself and she is also
a clone of herself. Sorry.
She is
thousands of clones
tens
of herself.
Thousands of clones of herself.
Oh, wow. Like, oh, it's just it's so much fun.
Let's jump back to the summary here.
Yeah,
tell me what this show is about.
So this show is about kind of the adventures of this boy, Toma, who lives in Academy City, which is this city in Japan somewhere where there's a lot of science that happens. And in this city, they try and develop supernatural powers in people through science. And he encounters a young girl called Index, who is part of the other kind of half of the world, which is all magic, religion kind of stuff all mixed together in a kind of magic-y, supernaturally mess. And they end up meeting and then get entwined with each other. Yeah, it's a fun show.
Yeah. We do get some pretty explicit ages early on. Toma is 15 years old. Index is 14 years old.
You're kidding.
No.
If
that is sinking in hard with you, wait until I get into some other characters' ages.
Because I'm sitting here, like, the whole time, like, I must have missed the age thing completely.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking, 15 for him? Yeah, sure, that sounds about right. But for Index, I was thinking, like, 11? 12? With that magic-y thing of, you know, she's only like 11 or 12, but actually she's like much smarter than that because of magic-y whatever. I did not realize that she was only technically a year younger. That's interesting. Again, like this keeps coming up, but my age detector of anime characters, especially girls, is just not working. Just doesn't work. I'm always out by at least a couple of years.
Yes. So I actually read the first few issues of the light novel.
Ooh, okay.
Alongside this. Normally, right. I'd go read the manga, but for this one, I was like, the light novel is such a sensation. I feel like I need to get it pure from the source.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some descriptions that come up in here that made me say, huh, okay.
Oh, dear.
So
should we have a pervy warning or something right now?
No. So the opening of Index is that she has just arrived. This guy, he opens his balcony door and she is just there hanging over the railing.
I love that scene because he's just like, oh, I guess I will just do my doonas. And he's doing it in a like kind of cheer himself up kind of way. And all of a sudden there's like, he's got his doonas and he looks at it and goes, did I already put him out? Because she's there lying on the thing like a doona, which is a thing that you do in Japan. Like you leave them over the rail of the balcony. Anyway, it's a fun moment. Yeah.
Yeah. But she comes inside. She explains that she is the Index Librorum Prohibitorum, which is some specific esoteric number of ancient magical texts and grimoires inside of her brain, because she has memorized every single one of them. And there are priest magicians from the church that are hunting her down.
I think I remember that it was 103,000 grimoires.
103,000, yes.
Was the number. I don't know why I remember that number. I think just because they keep bringing that number up. And I'm like, just say many. It doesn't matter. but yeah, she's getting chased by two members of her own church.
Yes.
Turns out. Again, like, I don't think they thought very hard about this. I think they just kind of went, yeah, churchy stuff. There we go. We'll put in some words. It'll work. Fine.
Style Magnus is the first magician we meet who is quote-unquote hunting for her. You know, we find out quite quickly that the twist is that they are actually her former, like, friends and teammates, and they are concerned for her, and they have ulterior motives for doing all of this. But the first one to make his approach is Style Magnus. who is this long-haired, red-headed magician who has like a black trench coat and summons a bunch of fire magic.
Teenage me was like, what a fucking cool dude. Look at this dude. He's so cool. Adult me is like, this motherfucking tryhard. What is going on?
Let me read you the from the light novel here. The white man was over 2 meters tall.
But no. No. Sorry. Sorry.
You should be on the fucking basketball court. I'm just doing magic. The white man was over 2 meters tall, but his face seemed younger than Kamijo's. His age was, likely 14 or 15. Similar to Index's age.
He's got a goatee! He's smoking! He smokes every scene! Oh my god.
This is a 2 meter tall 14-year-old. This is not made obvious by the show at all.
No.
I don't think there's a way to make it obvious.
No. I think, honestly, in the show, I feel like they've probably just disregarded that detail and just gotten... It's just like, he's like 20, whatever. We'll just go with it. It doesn't, like, it's... Sure, is it weird that this 20-year-old is chasing around this 14-year-old? Sure, I guess. But, like, I don't know. I got the impression that it was like a family relationship, not anything else like that. So, you know what? Fine, cool, yeah, whatever. It's a magical fantasy world. We can do what we want. Just, oh my god, he's not that young. No way. I do have a question. Speaking of Stale Magnus, all of the magicians in this world have a magical name.
Yes.
In the Japanese dub, yes. He introduced his magical name as Fortis931.
Yes, same.
Same in English? Okay. He then, in the next line, went, it means the mighty person. Did he translate the English name?
No, he did not. He just said, "This is my magic name is Fortis 931. Now I've told you that. I have to kill you."
Okay, good. Because in the Japanese dub, he goes like, "My name is Fortis 931. It means mighty person." And I'm looking at this going, Fortis doesn't mean that.
It's like, why would the numbers mean that?
Yeah, like the Fortis, like, I'm pretty sure that whatever language it would have been, sounds like it'd be for strong. Like, you know, forte in Italian is, like, with strength or whatever. So, like, yeah, that makes sense. But dude? Like, strong man, strong dude. Nah, dog, there's nothing in that. It's just strong. So weird.
I like that the magic names they have. So, all the magicians in this world, they have their, you know, their actual name they go by, but then they have this other tag. And they say that after you have said it to someone, it like makes your magic more powerful, but it also makes you more vulnerable to your opponent in future, I think. They're not quite clear on it.
No.
I like that it has the numbers on the end, like you've tried to enter a username and it's prompted you with, oh, this one's taken.
Yeah.
Do you want Fortis 931?
I didn't even think of it that way. When I first heard it, I was like, okay, there have been 930 other strong dudes. They've all fucking died. You're the next one. I like yours better. That's a lot better. All the cool names were taken, so I had to put XX Weed God XX 420 on the end.
So this is...
It is 2008. We would have been in the Halo matchmaking lobbies at this time. And yeah. I'm 100% certain that I did multiple times headshot XX double masturbator XX underscore. Like, for sure, I definitely killed that guy multiple times.
So this is an action series is what we are dealing with here.
Yes.
The structure of this show is that there is some... a supernatural mystery that is afoot. The magicians have come to the psychic city, even though they're not really supposed to be there. No one else believes in magic. But they have showed up. They're causing problems. And your main character, Toma, he gets involved and there ends up being some sort of big fight in which he uses his special power, which is the Imagine Breaker.
Which is, I like it because it is a special power that is not a special power. It is exactly the opposite of it. And when his right hand touches magic or science-y whatever abilities, it just stops it, cancels it out completely. Which... honestly, is a fun way to go, especially in 2008. I don't know if there's other things that are actually doing that. I feel like into the future, looking ahead, because I've got magic foreseeing powers.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there is a bit more of this, like, oh, we've got a main character, but he's got this weird quirk, like this weird thing that would make him underpowered. I feel like that wasn't as much of a thing at this time.
Yeah, it's always been a little bit of a shonen staple. Like, I think of, like, Hunter x Hunter examples that would have existed at the time.
Yeah,
like,
okay. Yeah.
This is a thing that, you know, the power that cancels out other powers.
Yeah.
I think it fits into anime nicely because it is a very schoolyard power.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I've got this strength, or I've got that times 100. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But I didn't know if I was going, like, we've both watched this show in the past, and coming back to it, I didn't know if I was going to like the Imagine Breaker.
Yeah, okay.
Because I'm like, there's so much interesting, like, you know, magic stuff going on, and like the. Especially the Esper's powers tend to be quite specific and have, like, some actual, like, thinking and physics going on behind them.
Yep.
And so, for this dude to just have a thing that walks in and just stops all of it, I'm like, is that actually interesting?
Yeah, yeah.
But it quickly becomes obvious that there are huge limitations on this. It is just his right arm and hand. All you have to do to beat him is just be faster than him,
yep,
or have any kind of martial skill.
And he is not a, like, you know, sports athlete or anything. He is just random schlub.
Yeah.
Not overweight or anything like that, but just, you know, no special reaction times, no particularly fast running, nothing like that. He's not super buff and strong, just regular high school dude.
Yeah. This other woman turns up from the church, Kanzaki.
Mm.
And her deal is she's got a samurai sword and she does... samurai sword magic, but when she fights him, she just stops doing the magic and just uses her sword or, like, all these metal strings that she's got set up.
Yeah, it's very fun and interesting that way. I will say that, you know, this is an action show, as you mentioned, and I feel like our action is a bit too, I don't know if I should be criticizing this, I think it might just be a taste thing.
Oh no, but go
for it,
yeah.
It's a bit too kind of Naruto, I haven't watched One Piece, but as far as I can remember from the bits I watched as a child watching it, like One Piece of, like, there's a lot of stopping and talking, and then there's like one move that happens, but it's not like fluid animation or anything. It's like, hee-yah, and then some sharp lines, and then the thing. Like, the animation isn't terrible at all, but it's not paced like I've recently been watching Kill la Kill.
Yes, yeah. Right.
And this is a really unfair comparison because, oh my god, they do some amazing things in that show with the fight scenes and stuff. But, yeah, like, it doesn't have the pace and it doesn't have the pizzazz that I really want. I still love this show, but it just, like, I think it doesn't fail on the action front, but I don't think it excels.
No. It's a show that's not quite as smart as it wants you to think it is.
Mm, yes, that's a good way to put it.
Because it wants to make a deal of the fact that, oh, you know, this isn't your grandpa's magic. This isn't your Dragon Quest cast mana things. You know, there's actual ritual conditions. All of the magicians are ritual magicians.
Yeah.
There are certain conditions that have to be filled before they can use their abilities.
Yep.
And all of the espers, like I said, have some sort of, like, physics-related quirk to what they are doing that can be reverse engineered in order to fight them.
Yes. And I think a lot of them even just require a lot of training. Like, eventually we'll meet Accelerator as a character. His power is that he can change the vector of things.
Yes.
Which, okay, cool, interesting. But there is a line I know that he mentions when he was like, I calculated that the wind would be blowing in whatever direction. And so clearly, like, he's trained enough to be doing some kind of math on the fly. And,
yeah,
like, it's not just a feeling thing. He just feels it out and he goes, haha, cool. It's like no, he's actually got to think about these things and go, all right, cool, lick his finger, check which way the wind's going. Okay, it's going that way. Okay, I'll push it this way.
Yeah, didn't think about it enough to not stand in the middle of this thing for ages while people are talking, charging up this big stupid energy ball.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Okay. Again, that's getting back to that, like, the pacing of this stuff is, like, just not quite amazing. But yeah, like, again, to your point, I think it is trying to be smarter than it is, but it is smarter than a lot of other things.
Yeah. So we watched through to episode 14. So those are the original arc with, you know, Star Magnus and Kanzaki, where they are trying to deal with Index's memory problems, which you find out that she's got. They're all concerned that her the amount of memory space she's got in her brain after absorbing all the grimoires is so tiny that if she experiences more than a year's worth of memories, her brain will explode.
Yeah, Johnny Mnemonic style. I think that was the movie, yeah. Which, you know, turns out complete bullshit thanks to science.
Yeah.
Which is, I love the way this show is just like, no, but science. And it's just the explanation. You know, we know that actually brains have a lot more capacity for storing knowledge than that. And yes. It turns out the church is just assholes.
Yeah.
And they're just making her erase her own memory once every, like, year.
Oh, I like the teacher stepping in and saying, you're like, you know, like, memories aren't just the one thing. Different kinds of memories are stored in different places.
Ah, very fun. Yeah.
So, fun. Neuroscience 101. So, you've got that as the starting arc. You have this second arc where we have deep blood.
It's like 3 or 4. Like, it's a very short arc.
I'd forgotten about this arc entirely coming back to this show. What is going on here?
It's basically just there is a girl who is a anti-vampire powered person.
Her blood attracts vampires, which... nobody has seen a vampire.
Yeah.
So they're not like a confirmed real thing, but she has vampire attracting blood. So everyone's like, well, if her blood attracts vampires, obviously vampires are real.
Yeah. And it attracts vampires, but I think it also kills them as well. Like her blood is poisonous to them.
Yeah.
And so they basically just have to go and save her. But it turns out the guy who was protecting her, kidnapped her.
Yeah, Aureolus Izzard.
Was actually. Another person who used to look after Index who wanted to find a way to solve her memory problem. And he failed. He was an idiot. Oh, it turns out all you need is a high schooler with a weird power that nobody can explain. Easy, simple solution. Why didn't you think of that, dude?
So that's the second arc we go through. And then the third one is Accelerator.
Is when Accelerator comes in and we learn more about Misaka and the fact that both Accelerator and Misaka are... level 5 espers, the top ranked espers in the city, and the kind of the city government is trying to turn Accelerator into a level 6 by cloning Misaka tens of thousands of times and then he seemed to enjoy it, having Accelerator kill those clones one at a time in a massive series of simulated battles.
The napkin math here is so funny.
I love that they go into it. In one of the scenes, he was reading the document, that Tomo was reading the documents, and it was like, well, if, what's his name, Ford Accelerator, like, I think it was like 1,000 times or something, then he could probably hit level 6, but we don't have 1,000 accelerators. Misakas, but what we can do is we can make 30,000 half power Misakas, and then we just have to like times the number of battles by 30. There we go.
We've opened our monster manual. We found that the amount of experience you get for defeating Misaka.
Oh my god. I really like that arc because there's a moment when like Toma's reading through this shit and he's like, but what if they're fucking wrong? How the fuck do they know that this is the case? Like, they don't.
Yeah.
He says they're probably gonna get to the end of it and then go, well, he's not level 6 yet. I guess we need some more, and then just keep going.
Yes.
Like, oh great, like very, very ridiculous, stupid plan that I find like in this world, I find it believable. Mm. Like, yeah, that would happen.
I wanted to read you, again, out of the light novel, Volume 1 has an afterword from Komachi Kazuma.
Ooh, okay.
Which I think is illuminating for understanding this show. And he explicitly talks about what his approach is to making it and making magic in this world.
Yeah, okay.
So, he says, come to think of it, this book got its start online. The magicians in RPGs and such that can create balls of fire or revive the dead at a cost of some MP are quite convenient because the term magic lets them do whatever they want. But, for the sake of argument, let's assume magic actually existed. What kinds of people used magic throughout history? What kinds of rules exist behind the term magic? This all started when I typed magician and actually exist into a search engine in an attempt to find an answer to these questions.
Oh my god, it honestly, from what I know of you, it feels like he's your soulmate. Just like, I need to know something. Let's just Google this bit.
Siri, Google magician actual real in real life.
Oh.
It came up with things like how to control a black cat with silver vine powder And voodoo witch doctors used fugu poison to create zombies that had a state of apparent death. I got interested when I realized the workings of the occult seemed an awful lot like science. Dengeki Bunko, the publisher of this, their light novels treat magic like it's normal, so I thought a novel that went deeper into the idea of magic might be a new idea. Rather, this is a work that was more about my personal interest rather than an idea marketed to a certain type of reader.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Props to him for, like, yeah, that's a... It's cool. Like, if you follow that. Again, I'm going to repeat what I said before. I still think that even though he put some research in, I don't think it was a deep understanding. I think it was a, ooh, that sounds cool. Let's take that and put it over there. That's not a bad thing in any way.
Well, we'll talk about the ideas he plays with, going back to the Style Magnus fight.
Yeah.
So Style Magnus has the power to summon this flame elemental. And even though Toma's got his Imagine Breaker that can cancel it, it doesn't matter because it's fire and it just keeps coming back.
Yeah, it's specifically like it's called Innocentius, and it's a thing that when you see it in the animation, he puts his hand on it and it's just a flame that dies down and then immediately flares back up and dies down, immediately flares back up. So yeah, cool effect.
Yes, but the magic behind it is that it has to come from a bunch of drawn sigils. And so he goes like downstairs. It's in a fight in an apartment building. Goes downstairs and there's like all of these stickers on the wall that he's drawn the sigils on. And he wins the fight because he sets off the fire alarm and ruins all of the sigils because the ink runs.
Just, so silly. But then, like, I do like, one thing I really like about this show is that there is a very, very clear, I don't know if you want to call it foreshadowing or if it's just like cause and effect that happens repeatedly. So one idea we've got is that like he uses all these sigils that he's hand drawn on all the stickers and then the ink runs. So the very next time we see Stale with the Innocentius thing, he's actually got a bunch of cards that have been printed out and then they all stick to the wall magically somehow. But like clearly the ink is not going to run from those because they've been printed with whatever. Like he's changed up his tactic. But throughout the show, we've got a bunch of these things that happen that like this happens and causes this next thing in the next arc and causes this thing. For example, at the very, very beginning, we see Toma meeting Mikasa and Misaka, sorry. And they, you know, Misaka's, hot-headed and she gets angry and she like electrifies some stuff, which is her power. She's got electricity powers. And that causes a blackout. And that leads to the next day, all the stuff in his fridge is ruined. His aircon hasn't been running. And so he's, you know, like kind of annoyed, whatever. And that's part of why he goes to put his futon out because he was sweating into it all night. And he's like, well, I'm going to need to air this out. And then even further than that, during the towards the end of the first arc, when they're, you know, dealing with Index, like they've activated the defense mechanism that's built into her brain. And so she's like firing a laser. They knock a table, which makes her fall over. And the laser beam like shoots up into the sky. We see a shot of it destroying a satellite. And you're like, haha, cool. It's like so powerful that it destroyed a satellite. Crazy. That satellite ends up being the like super AI computer program that was planning all of the conflict and the leveling up of Accelerator in the third arc. Like, there's all of these things that one leads into the next, which leads into the next. And I don't feel like I've seen many shows, particularly many anime shows, that really have that very clear, like, cause and effect loop. It's really nice. I don't know how to put it. It's just like, I was looking like, dang, I didn't think that that would be but that's the thing. And I did not catch this stuff as when I watched it the first time. But, oh, wow, fantastic.
Yeah, that's what creates the momentum in this show is that the events are toppling into each other like this. When it works, it works. Like you're saying on her electricity powers, they work out that that's how Toma can track down Accelerator when he's fighting the clones, the sisters, because this entire city is full of these big wind turbines for power.
Yep.
And when there's no wind, the turbines keep turning by themselves whenever they are around her, just because of all the electricity she produces.
Yeah, it's really quite neat. Is that just my dumb brain not like failing to make connections and finally having it pointed out to me and going, oh, wow, maybe, but whatever. It's
yeah. Let's talk about the railgun.
She's cool.
Yeah. what works for you about her as a character?
I think part of it is her energy. Like, she's got that I mean, she's got, I don't want to say she's got spunk. That's a weird word to use.
She's introduced as a goofy tsundere character.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say like really cliche tsundere. Like I wouldn't say that she's immediately attracted to this guy. I think it's simply that like in the tsundere, in the fact that not that she loves him, but like she doesn't want people to think they know what she's feeling. She's like, that's not what I'm thinking. You're an idiot, whatever. And I think that's endearing. Cool ass powers. Looks good in a skirt.
Yeah, it does specify the reason she is called the railgun is because, you know, she does a lot of electrocuting and zapping, her most powerful thing is actually like magnetizing the air in the same way that like a railgun uses magnets to fire metal projectiles at high speed.
In her case, she fires coins at people at supersonic speeds. Cool stuff. I don't know. I think also what might attract me to that character, like it might actually be that the clones that are made of her also feel like distinct characters, but they also feel like her. The characters have a very like muted, toned down personality. They've got a very interesting speech pattern.
I don't know. I loved the vocal quirk.
I need to know how it worked. Sorry. I need to know how it worked in English.
The way her vocal quirk works in English is that she is always talking as though she is narrating her speech in third person.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's how it was in the Japanese one. Can you like give me an example sentence?
She will say like, oh, we need to look after this cat, Misaka said with a note of concern in her voice.
Yeah. Okay. That is exactly what it is in the Japanese dub as well. But honestly, like I found it endearing. I know it, like that might just be me. Like I remember playing Mass Effect and seeing the Elcor, and they were the big gray aliens that would, you know, just they were spoke entirely in monotone, and then they would end each sentence with, "This one said with an enthusiastic tone, something like that." Like they would describe how they were saying it, and I know I thought it was a cool, fun quirk.
Yeah, it's maybe where it doesn't work, and this would be a hard thing to get in translation, is just often there's just a bit too much that she's annotating onto her sentences.
Yeah, okay.
And it reads like when you were teaching a high schooler how to write sentences.
Yep, yep.
And they just go a bit overboard because they decide that said isn't good enough.
Yes.
And they have to tack too much description onto everything.
Yeah, yeah. I totally get what you mean. And there were definitely some moments in the Japanese dub as well where that was the case. But I guess what might even be the change in it for me is simply that because, like for me at least, Japanese is a second language. Like I can kind of tune out a lot of that because I've got the subtitles in front of me. So I basically just read the stuff and then I'm just, the extra stuff I'm hearing is just bonus. It's like, oh yeah, cool, extra stuff. Whereas definitely for sure I could see in English just having each sentence also having such and such said with a disapproving voice tacked onto the end of could also be quite annoying for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I suppose you could argue she's only 15 herself.
Yeah, absolutely. And like getting back to Misaka, I guess another aspect of it is that like she is so righteous, I guess. Like in throughout her arc, we see that she's actually been destroying a bunch of the facilities that were involved in the cloning of her. And like she feels responsible for all of the stuff that's happened. She made a decision as a child and she was lied to. They were told like, yeah, with your DNA, we can, you know, help fix all of these issues and cure people and stuff. And instead they decided they were just going to make a bunch of clones that they would send off to get killed. Like crazy. And she, like the fact that she feels responsible for that and is taking that into her own hands. Like, yeah. And I think I resonated with the, like, especially as a teenager, that kind of, no, I don't need your help. I'm going to do this on my own. That real, like, independent, not wanting assistance thing. As an adult, looking back on it, nah, dog, just ask for help. Your life is so much easier. But, you know, it was inspiring, I guess.
Yes. I think the Accelerator arc works really well here. It's the reason that I came out of this watching excited to watch the rest of this show, because that's not how I really felt going through the arc previously.
Yeah.
I was in the middle of the Deep Blood arc going, oh God, this is going to be shit. And so we should back things up and talk about just the way it sets up. Like as we're jumping into this arc, we get introduced to Himegami is her name.
Yes.
The way she's introduced is that Toma, Index, and some of Toma's classmates go to like a McDonald's And she is just passed out on a table after having eaten 30 hamburgers and doesn't have money for the bus fare home.
Oh, boy.
And they get in just a very stupid argument with her.
Yeah, just unbelievably dumb. Yeah, and while they're arguing, you know, figuring stuff out, whatever, a bunch of agents come, dudes in suits, that, and then she says that they are her cram school teachers. And they're just like, why are there 30 of them? Why are they coming to pick you up from a McDonald's? She walks off with them. Then it turns out that the cram school that she was at is technically a cram school, but it's also a front for the villain of the arc, who is set up a weird cult.
Yes.
I think
the cult is very underdeveloped.
Yeah, like I do not get what the connection was between the cult and like Himagami, and I can't even fully remember what the connection was between Himagami and the villain. Like, he needed to use her for something, but like
he needed a vampire because his plan was to turn Index into a vampire so that she could live forever, or at least find out how vampires don't have their brains explode from having too many memories.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. I'm sure I did like see that in the thing.
Doesn't make sense.
No, like it. There is a logic to it. It is not a good logic, but there is a logic to it.
Yeah.
But like it again, it just wasn't really impactful at all. Like this arc really did just feel kind of like, let's introduce this new character.
Yeah. It ropes Style Magnus back in.
Yeah,
because it's like, oh, he's back in the city now, and he's working for a guy that hangs upside down in a tank, and he like approaches Toma, who at this point is having some memory loss problems.
We haven't even gotten to what is probably my favorite like thing that this series does is that we should go back a little bit at the end of the first arc in curing and fixing Index's memory thing with the programming that they had inside or whatever. In doing that, Toma got hit with a piece of magic feather, whatever, and it completely wiped his memory. I love that the show did this. It feels like a really, like, bold move. Like, we are literally, what, 6 episodes in? And they're wiping the main character's memory. Not even just the stuff that happened over the last week. All of it. We haven't watched this bit yet, but in the future, there's a point where, like, Toma goes back and visits his family. He has no idea who anybody is, like... Wow, I've never thought of that as even a thing that you could do in a show, but it like I think they do it really interestingly.
Maybe I'll have to watch it further because I don't know if I was as sold on it as a choice. It felt like, you know, amnesiac protagonist is kind of a staple and they needed to get to that point. But by this point, they've already like introduced everyone and set everything up. So really, it's just him re-meeting the same people and us having to go through a lot of the exposition a same time again.
but we don't, though, because his whole thing is that he wants to keep all his memory loss secret. So he's basically just rolling along with everything. Some dudes come up who are his friends, and he like when they after the memory loss and they rock it back up, and he's like, are these pervy dudes my friends? What the fuck? And I'm like, yeah, cool. Like, I would probably have that reaction too. Yeah, I don't know.
I'll sit with it a bit longer, see how I feel going forward. But, like, Style shows back up. He's pretending to know who Style is. And he says, I've got this paperwork about this cram school you need to look for. And for some reason, he pulls it all out by magic and then spins all the paperwork around in the air.
That was a great moment. I'm like, wait. Okay, cool.
Like, you can't fucking read that. What are you doing?
I like that he even pulled it out to begin with, because he didn't need to. All he needed to say was, here's the cram, like, this is the cram school I'm looking for. Like, let's go see
it. You got to come with me.
Yeah.
They go in there. There's, like, a dead knight. They're like, that's a knight of the Catholic Church. For some reason, Toma thinks it's a robot.
Yeah. Yeah. There's very clearly blood coming out of this thing.
Yeah, it's a suit of armor with blood coming out.
And he's like, oh, yeah, this is a cool robot, I guess. Weird. Weird. It definitely, it feels like, it's not a filler arc for sure, but it definitely like feels like one a bit. Just kind of, we need to, you know, put some stuff in here. And that honestly might even just be a symptom of the, like, the memory loss part. Like, we need to have a moment here where we can address the memory loss and whatnot and see what the impact that has without it eating into a big main arc. Like, if we'd had him, like dealing with the memory loss for the, like, for the first time and stuff like that in the accelerator arc, I think it would have like taken too much time away from all of that development.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have wanted it there either.
Yeah, it's a weird one, but
yeah, Himagami like hangs around afterwards.
Yep.
And for the rest of the show, like, you know, Index kind of gets shelved as a character while Toma's going off and hanging out with, like, the sisters or with Railgun.
Yep.
And so you just have all these cutaway shots where it's Index, it's Himagami, and it is his teacher who looks like a 12-year-old for anime reasons.
Again, one of my favorite tropes. I don't know why I like it so much, but it is. I find it endlessly funny. Oh, just hilarious. And I like it in this one because it doesn't get into like a weird sexy thing at any point. It's always just like, you know, she's a teacher, but she's talking.
It is heavily implied that the teacher is romantically interested in him.
Is it?
Yeah.
I did not get that impression.
All right. Keep watching it with that reading because, like, you know, she's the, oh, you know, all the other students like give him shit because they're like, oh, you know, the teacher's so much more interested in you than the rest of us. And she's...
Yep, I definitely got that, but I didn't take that as being romantically interested. I took that as being, so like, she's got an interest in, like, she takes all of these students who are, like, level zero, level, like, the kids with no powers, basically. And I took that to be a, like, she's interested in him because she doesn't know that he's got the Imagine Breaker power, but she's like, what is up with this kid? Like, everything I try to get this kid to develop powers or whatever is not working. And I just took it as that, as, like, a... kind of a challenge and kind of like a scientific curiosity, if you will.
Yeah, maybe it's also because I was reading it as like stealth harrowing towards the end where you have her and Index yeah. and Himagami just hanging around waiting for Toma to come back.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, I will not begrudge you that interpretation because for sure it definitely feels like a head's there. The weirder part for me was that he knows where his teacher lives. He just rocks up when Index is hurt one day. He just rocks up.
I do think it justifies that there's like a directory.
No.
No?
No. No one that's accessible to his teacher. I don't want any of my students to know where I live. When I was in Japan, my students did know where I lived, but that was because I lived like a minute away from my school and kids would be walking to school and see me leaving late sometimes and be like, yo, sensei, what you doing? So, but like, I'm sure if I lived a little bit further away, they wouldn't be like, oh, where's your house? Oh, where's your house? Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
We needed to come around on Accelerator.
We do.
Because a lot of, you know, what we just watched up to and what we finished with was the big fight. Toma says, well, this stuff with killing sisters, this is messed up. Obviously, you can't go and fight him because, you know, speaking to Misaka, saying, you know, if you go and fight him, the system, all the satellites and everyone reading this stuff are going to go, oh, well, that's an expected outcome. But if a level zero beats him, it's going to mess up their data so bad that they'll stop the entire experiment.
Very much not how that would work. But you know what? I like the enthusiasm. Honestly, like, that sounds like a dumb plan because then the system is just going to go, hang on a minute. What's with that level zero kid?
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's just painting a target on his back.
He's never heard of a statistical anomaly. He's like, outliers? What's that?
Ah, man. Yeah, Accelerator is an interesting character. Again, getting further in the series. We're not there yet, but I like what they end up doing with him later.
How did... The thing I didn't quite like about Accelerator was just his vocal delivery. I don't know if that's taken through from the original or it was just a weird direction. He spoke really quickly. Like, he ran all of his sentences together.
Yeah, no, the Japanese dub did not have that. He sounded quite unhinged a lot, but it wasn't a fast-talking unhinged. It was a really, like, talking down was his main mode of talking, and he had this really weird laugh that was really, like... raspy and phlegmy and kind yeah, of thing right. But yeah, it definitely was not like lightning fast talking. I guess they're trying to imply like vector change is speed change kind of.
Yeah, do you want to explain his level 5 power?
This, oh my god,
because this is genuinely not a power I've seen in any other shit.
No, it does not make any sense because what is a vector? It's when something moves? Like, is when something changes direction, right? That's what I'm talking. That's what we're thinking, or is it like? Like the movement of something.
You know,
something?
I did not take physics class in school. I know you.
No, I didn't. I'm a linguist by trade. Yes. Real life shit is not my domain. But yeah, it's like the way they explain is power working is if there is something that is moving in a direction.
Yeah, any sort of like transfer of energy.
I think they like in the dub they called it vector. Was the, like he was changing vectors.
Yeah.
I think velocity should have been what they called that. Because in my mind, it's if there is anything that is moving in a direction, and like the example was wind blowing or blood flowing, something like that, he can modify that vector, that velocity to speed up, slow down, or reverse. And so, you know, most of his powers are things like feeling the air around him and going, okay, it's blowing in that direction. Instead, it's going to blow in that direction much faster, and he like but only this bit of the air, so it's like a slice sharp slice of wind or something like that. At one point he sticks its finger into one of the clones, like a bullet wound that the clone has, and he's like, haha, I can reverse the flow of your blood, which will make you die instantly because the heart does not like it when your blood reverses flow. I'm like, okay, yeah, like cool power, but like again, I like the fact that they highlighted that he needs to be, maybe not doing math necessarily, but like really thinking and carefully considering like what's the wind flowing around him? What's the direction of things that are happening? Like if something is coming towards him and it's going to hit him, like he needs to judge exactly when he's able to reflect that thing.
Although that being said, he has this kind of force field up at all times. Just by default.
Yeah.
Everything else he does is just showing off. His actual practical power is his force field, because all of the sister clones are coming at him with like assault rifles that they have been given by the company.
Yeah. All these 14-year-old girls with fucking AR-15s just running around.
I did like, you can recognize a sister as compared to Misaka because the sisters all have goggles. And the reason that they wear the goggles is because they don't have the innate power that Misaka has to see the flow of electrons in the air. And so if they are not wearing those goggles, they can't even use their electric powers in the right direction.
I'm sure they could, but it'd just be like wandering off randomly.
Yeah, random discharges.
Yeah. Yeah, like cool. Like I like that idea. It's cool. Yeah, Accelerator's a weird kid with weird powers. They try to explain it, not very well.
Yeah.
That's about it, really. Like
they come back to him. It's all good.
Yeah.
But yeah, and the way that this fight goes is that he rocks, Terma rocks up in the middle of the fight. He gets a bunch of shit thrown at him because, again, the right hand doesn't do anything if you're just having shit thrown at you.
Oh, very fun. And again, like this fight suffered with that, you know, like there would be things thrown and then there would be waiting for a moment as somebody's like, aha, Accelerator says, but you can't withstand my thing when I do this. And he does another thing and then he goes, aha, you're still alive. Wow. Okay. How about I do this?
Yeah. This annoyed me actually because Accelerator at no point figures out what the Imagine Breaker does.
Yes.
Or even that it is a power.
I
he just assumes his own powers are failing for whatever reason.
I kind of appreciate this because, like, his character is built up as arrogant asshole who thinks he's the strongest person in the world. And, I mean, yeah, if you're thinking that, you're probably not thinking, I need to use strategy to try and, like, outsmart my opponent or anything. He's just like, nah. I've gotten through life by brute forcing shit because I'm strong enough to do that. I'm just going to keep doing that. Hmm. And sure, like, I think it's either a 50-50 in his mind then, like, whether it's something special about this dude or something's wrong with me. And, you know, he's been told at the front of the fight that this guy's a level zero. So it's not this dude. There's nothing special about him.
I understand the intent. It's to show him as arrogant. Yeah. But I don't think it quite sells it in that, you know, this guy is so hyper-intelligent that he's shown to be able to, like, calculate wind speeds in the air.
Very true.
And
very
yet
true.
Never once thinks, hey, why did my power not work just then?
Yeah, okay.
Like, they didn't need to show him working it out, even if they just showed him confused about it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's maybe it's also strange because we're coming off the Aureolus Izzard fight.
Yes.
Where Izzard immediately works out, oh, I just have to summon guns out of the air and shoot you with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only reason Izzard loses is because Toma figures out that
his power is if you believe it, it'll happen.
Yeah, he didn't clap hard enough. Fairies weren't real.
Yeah. That was such a silly moment.
Yeah, Toma won that fight by doing the Yu-Gi-Oh chuckle. Why is he laughing? I've just dealt a powerful blow to him. How could he possibly think he still has a chance?
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. At the end of the fight, Accelerator actually gets fucked up.
Yeah, he just gets punched repeatedly.
But it fucks him up. Like, we haven't seen it yet, but as he comes up later in the future, he loses some of his powers.
Christ.
He loses access to them. He ends up with like an implant that means that he can only use them, like if he flicks a switch, and only for a couple of minutes at a time. And it could be from something else, but I vaguely remember it being like from this fight. He just got punched so many times.
Well, come around it. I'm interested to see what they do, because it became very obvious during that fight that there is a bit of a problem doing fight choreography when your character can only punch with one of the two hands that they have.
Yes, very, very much.
He's got a right hook, and you just got to do that one right hook over and over, which isn't that interesting to look at, and is obviously going to cause problems down the road.
Yeah.
Maybe the show addresses it, maybe it doesn't. I'm interested to see where it goes.
I think that's why the show really has tried to surround Toma with all of these characters with powers and magical powers, because like then you've got the opportunity to, they can do all the interesting cool fights, and then we just need like 5 minutes of him like negating some stuff, figuring out the thing, and then going in for a punch. Like, whereas you like that pulls away from the impact of like the death of the boss or whatever. But you know, I believe the idea is meant to be that we get that like fulfillment of like cool fight scenes from seeing all the other characters do their cool powers and stuff.
Yeah, and I guess as a, you know, of one set of powers in a broader team, there is probably a bit more that you can do with it. He's the trump card. He's not meant to be the frontliner. And it would just be an effect of the narrative that because we've got to do some one-on-one fights with him right now, we just have to see some stuff that isn't quite as interesting as the fights further down the road are going to be.
Yeah.
We'll come around to more production stuff in the second time we come back to this. I will say I really like the opening theme song and the opening video for this.
Absolutely. Honestly, the opening like theme song and video are fantastic. The animation quality in general is really, really quite nice. There are moments of 3D CG animation for backgrounds and stuff, but it never feels like clunky. It all feels like nice, understated, just, you know, maybe like it felt more, instead of like, look, we're using 3D animation, it was like, this is going to be a more efficient pipeline for us doing this. So we're just going to like throw it in the background here and not, you know, dump it all in the fight scenes or whatever and blow our budget that way.
Yeah. The city's got a very clean and clear aesthetic to it.
Yes.
I think, again, those wind turbines do so much for just giving it an identity 100%. That way.
And even like there's blimps that are the news blimps. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, cool. It's got its own identity. Really, really interesting. There is a moment in the beginning of the Accelerator arc when he meets up with, when Toma meets up with Misaka again, and like, I think it's the, like, he sees her for the first time and he doesn't know who she is, doesn't remember. He loses his money in a vending machine, and so she comes along and helps him out and punches the vending machine.
Yeah, she's got a special roundhouse kick that makes it produce cans.
It was a kick, that's right. And it, like, spits out a bunch of drinks, but they're random drinks. And I just wanted to highlight that one of the drinks was a soup curry drink, and the other one was a strawberry oden. Do you know what oden is?
No, I do not.
Oden is like a kind of a boiling hot pot thing where you put in a bunch of like stock broth and then you put in a bunch of food and you just leave it to simmer for like hours. And then they have it at the convenience stores in wintertime. And you can just go up and get like, oh yeah, I'll get two of the like the simmered boiled eggs and like bits of tofu that have been boiling in it or whatever. It's a savory experience.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is putting strawberry in oden? Who is making a drink that is soup curry flavored?
Yeah.
I want it. Oh my god, I want to try some soup curry drink. What the fuck is this?
It's a bit tough to make the Bertie Blotz every flavor bean gag land when I look, my cultural understanding of Japanese vending machines is, yeah, you probably could get one of those out of that.
You very much cannot. Very much no. As wild as we think their drinks are, most of them are pretty much normal. Every now and then you might get one weird thing that's like, yeah, it's Pepsi, but it's got like lime and orange. But that's about it. I had clear Coke once. It was gross. It's really, really bad. I
can imagine. All right. We'll leave off there. I'm excited to see the rest of this. And I'm excited for more Railgun, which I believe is coming up.
Thank you for listening to Endless 08. I've been Duffo.
And I've been BJ. You can find all our stuff at endless08.com and on our social media.
If you know a real freak, tell them about the show. We'll see you next time.